Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Hi, everyone. I'm Francesco. I'm a researcher at AEF, and I'm here to talk to you about making Ethereum finalize faster and how this relates to the future of staking, to potential staking changes to come. So first of all, let's recap. What are we actually trying to achieve with single slot finality, or generally faster finality? There's actually one goal is faster finality in itself. So we don't want to have a UX and security trade-off. You're not supposed to need to choose between waiting for finality or and getting higher security, or accepting something in confirmation faster but at a lower security. And this is also not just for regular users, but for rollups whose interrupt speed is essentially bottlenecked by the finality time on L1. But this is not the only motivation, actually, for a faster finality roadmap. One reason is also just to generally improve the consensus protocol that we have and kind of fix some essentially security problems that exist in it. Not really critical security problems, but more basically going from the current security properties that we have, which are suboptimal, to really like optimal, like provable security properties. And one question that should come to you is, why don't we just do it immediately? And the main reason why we can't in the short term is that we just have way too many validators. We have 1 million plus validators. I think it's almost like another 100,000 on top of that. It's just way too many to just consistently aggregate in each slot. This essentially is a lot of verification time for the signature and a lot of bandwidth to propagate them. The thing is, we don't actually have 1 million validators. We have maybe 10,000 nodes. It's the exact number is not clear, but something on that order of magnitude. And we already know that we can handle more than that per slot. So we already have committees of around 30,000 validators per slot. So that load we know we can deal with. So one thing that's coming up that's going to help us is MaxEB, the ability for validators to have up to 2048 ETH, and to allow for consolidation. So we have MaxEB in the next fork. What else do we need? So first of all, we need a protocol that actually is like fast finalizing and still has all of the properties that we want, which are many, and we have like a quite unique sort of model that we operate in. And then the other thing that we need is validator set capping. So we don't want to, go from 1 million validators to 30,000. Then we are comfortable that we can handle this load. We turn on single slot finality or faster finality, and then we round trip all the way back to 1 million validators because more small stakers come in or a deconsolidate or something like that, and we're back to square one, and the system actually breaks. And the first part of this, just the consensus protocol part, we actually have a lot of progress in already. There's been a lot of work in the last 2 years, and we essentially have protocols that we're quite happy with in theory. The second part, it's a bit fresher area, but I'll essentially talk to you about both parts in the rest of the talk. So with the first part, I'll focus on a specific protocol, which we've called three slot finality. So single slot finality is a bit of a meme. It doesn't necessarily mean single slot. It really just means like we want to have faster finality. And what does roughly this three slot finality protocol look like? It's more or less much like the current protocol. We are really reusing a lot of the same, at least like conceptual components. So it still has a what we call a dynamically available component, which is essentially like a LMD ghost, which is what we have today. And this is the part that's supposed to keep working even if we cannot finalize, for essentially extra resilience. And then we also have Casper FFG, this finality gadget that eventually gives us economic security as long as two-thirds of the validator set is online. And the other, another component that's quite different from today is that, first of all, we would be able to finalize fast, but specifically we would be able to finalize in three slots, with finality being pipelined so that you need multiple voting rounds for finality, but these would be essentially pipelined over multiple slots, so that we can still have blocks coming in between these rounds. So yeah, this is what it would look like. We have a first lot, a block comes in, just like today. We have a first round of votes. At first, votes just like today have three components: a source, a target, which are Casper FFG concepts, and a head, which just says this is the thing that I believe to be the head of the chain. At first, we would only care about this head vote, which would be for B in the ideal case. And then we would move on to the next slot. New block comes in, B prime. Now the head vote would be for B prime, so we've moved on to this next block. The target vote would now be for the checkpoint BT. So just like today, we have this concept of checkpoints that are essentially blocks and epochs for Casper FFG, and these are the objects that we essentially do finality over. Here we would have these like block slot checkpoints. So a vote for BT as a target would essentially be trying to say, I think that B is ready to be finalized or to enter the finality pipeline, essentially. Then we move on to the next slot. We get a B double prime. Again, this gets a head vote. Now the target is the one from the previous slot, so B prime T plus one. And then the source is BT. So now this source vote is essentially saying, I know that B is justified and is ready to actually be finalized, and we're kind of getting to the end of the finality pipeline for B. But as you can see, there's three things kind of going on at once. B enters the finality pipeline at the beginning, then B prime enters in the middle slot, and then B double prime. So all of them are in kind of different stages of the finality pipeline, and you can that's reflected by the kinds of votes that they receive. Essentially, this pipeline for B would look like this. Already after the first round of voting, we could confirm it. At this point, we have no economic security, but we already have very strong guarantee that it's not going to be reorged. After the second round of voting, once we've gotten these target votes, B would be justified. And after the third round of voting, after we've gotten all of the source votes, it would be finalized. And we don't even need to think about the blocks, B prime and B double prime existing in the middle. We could also just focus about the votes that are relevant to B, so the head vote, the target vote, and the source vote, if we really just want to focus on the finality pipeline for B specifically. And even if B prime, B double prime, like these other blocks in the subsequent slots were to be missed, for example, the proposer does not show up, the protocol actually guarantees that B can still complete its pipeline, essentially. That like no matter what, if the proposer of slot T is honest in the way it creates B and sends it in a timely manner, then B will successfully go through this whole pipeline and be finalized. And yeah, I didn't go into more details of why this is the case, but you can check out the paper or blog post for that. And now this is the there's this other part to this whole discussion, which is the one that's a bit less understood, like more kind of earlier research, which is validator capping. So the problem of making sure that we always maintain a kind of constant load that we know how to handle, and we don't do this round tripping of reducing the validator set through consolidation and then going back up to like an unsustainable validator set, essentially. And specifically, I'll focus on a quite recent idea called Orbit. That's one way, one point in the trade-off space of how to handle this problem. But I'll try to also introduce the problem in general. So this is from Vitalik's one of Vitalik's many latest posts on the future of the protocol, in particular the one from the about the merge. So you can kind of see essentially this spectrum of possible ways to handle this problem. On the right, all the way on the right, you have this Tendermint style kind of small validator set, maybe a few hundreds, or in the context of Ethereum, this could be a few thousands. And these are really large validators with a lot of stake. So there it's quite simple to do. For example, in Ethereum, we could say that there's 30,000 validators. As we already said, this is a number that we know we can handle. And so we could just say, okay, we only have space for 30,000 validators. That's the most that we can do if we want to have faster finality. But this means that each validator would have to have like a very high balance, not incredibly high, but a couple thousand ETH or 1,000 ETH, which is much, much higher than the barrier to entry that we have today of 32 ETH. So that's kind of one extreme that would significantly change the barrier to be a staker. And then the other extreme is that all the way on the left, which is essentially we just do random sampling of a committee. So we say there are no barriers to entry. We could even say you can be a staker with one ETH, or you know, maybe we don't even have a minimum. But then we sample, we do like random sampling essentially of a committee. And the issue with this is that this committee size is fixed. So if the total validator set is much, much bigger than the committee size, then the committee will inevitably have like a very small amount of stake. Like if only you know, today we have 1 million validators, only 30,000 can participate in each slot, then about 1/30 of the only 1/30 of the stake will exist within each committee. So essentially, very low economic finality. So that's like kind of all the way on the other end of the trade-off space. Somewhere in the middle of the trade-off space is a solution where we do sampling in a somewhat different way that's still trying to ensure that we have a fixed size committee, but it is trying to take advantage of existing heterogeneity in the way that the stake distribution is. So, you know, today we have, sure, 1 million validators, but many validators are actually clustered in staking pools, even though the protocol does not actually know about that. And so there is this you know, natural concentration of stake that already does exist, and it is a, you know, a natural thing to occur. And we can try to actually take advantage of that to find the point that's somewhere in between these two extremes. And just to call it out, this though there it says Tendermint style in the context of Ethereum, more likely what this would look like, it's what has been called sometimes rainbow staking. So where maybe we essentially split up staking into two different classes of validators, one which do are responsible for essentially finality or a testing and are more restricted or like have this higher barrier to entry of having a higher amount of ETH, so that we can essentially limit the number of these entities, whereas there could be like a lighter class of stakers that are still responsible for things like making inclusion lists or even block proposing or essentially other parts of the staking pipeline that don't really have this like technical limitation that a testing does. But yeah, so that's one possible way to go about it, but I'll discuss this kind of middle one that we call Orbit. So what is Orbit? There's this, Orbit essentially is a technique for sampling a committee in a particular way that tries to achieve these two things of having the committee being of a fixed predetermined size that we can handle and of having a lot of stake. So let's call T the maximum effective balance, which is becoming 2048 ETH as of the next fork. Once we select this committee, we'll take a, so let's look at how does a staker with S stake, so this could be, you know, 32 ETH or 64, et cetera, how does it get into the committee? It is selected with probability S over T, so proportional to stake, and it has, it gets rewarded when it is in the committee. So if it is actually in the committee, it is participating, it's a testing, it gets rewarded with some constant reward that does not depend on stake. So this is sort of the opposite of what happens, you know, how you normally do this, where the selection is random, so you don't make the selection proportional to stake, but the rewards are proportional to stake. But because, you know, we still have this proportionality in one of the two terms, you still get that the expected rewards per validator are still proportional to stake, as they, of course, should be. And so what does this look like in practice? On the top, you see a representation of a validator set with different sizes of validators. For example, validator with the size T would be like 2048 ETH. And then there's you know, the same amount of stake split up in different ways, like T over 2, T over 2, or four validators of size T over 4. And then you see this kind of projection down to the Orbit committee. This projection is essentially trying to tell you what is the expected outcome when you're sampling from the validator set on top and you're getting an Orbit committee. Expected here is really like in the probability sense of expectation. So let's start with the one on the left. The staker with T stake, 2048 ETH, for example, will be selected always with probability 1. It's always going to be in the committee because, as we said, the probability was S over T. So T over T, just always in the committee. We move next to the T over 2 and T over 2 stakers. They're selected with probability 1/2. So they'll only be in the committee half of the time. And so when we think about expectations, essentially we expect that one of the two will be in the committee, but only one of the two. of course, it can be that it's both or none, but that's just the expected case, let's say. And 3/4, same thing. They're all selected probability 1/4, so that we expect one of them to be in the committee. And this way of selecting has essentially this interesting property that no matter how you split the stake, so invariant to the stake distribution, the size of your orbit committee is always the same. So you can see, you know, on the orbit committee line, it doesn't matter if we split the stake as T or T/2 and T/2, or the other case, the expected case is that we always get one validator per T stake, essentially. And so this is essentially what gives us validator set capping, at least in expectation, but then this is easy to turn into actual validator set capping in practice because the variance is low, basically. And we can just cap it and it's not a big deal then. More concretely, with a bit more, you know, dramatic effect of looking at a much, much a more out of proportion kind of way of splitting stake, we have still this like 2048 ETH validator, this like max balance validator. Again, it gets projected down to a single 2048 ETH validator itself, so it's always selected. When we take the look at the picture on the right, it's the same amount of stake, but split up much more dramatically in however many it is, I guess 64 validators of 32 ETH each. So this could be, you know, solo stakers, just completely different entities. And again, when we project down, we only get one validator. So what does this mean? That just on average, each of those will participate only once every 64 slots, essentially. So that still the expected contribution to the orbit committee is just one. And again, to repeat, like, what does this get us? First of all, what I've tried to argue in the previous slides is it gets us validator set capping, basically out of the box. So if you say that D is the total deposit size, so today this is just the total amount of stake, which today would be 35 millions, this essentially means that the expected size of the orbit committee is D over T. This would be basically with these parameters around 17,000. So before I said, today we handle exactly twice as much of that, 34,000 each slot. So we already know that this is something that we're perfectly able technically to handle. And then it gets us, if we have enough consolidation, like if we have, you know, staking pools and so on, consolidate enough, it gets us the possibility of having high economic finality immediately. Like a single orbit committee might be small, it might only be 17,000 validators, but it should contain most of the stake, essentially. Like most of the consolidated stake will always be in it. And then another aspect that I did not touch on is that in principle, it could mean that it's more plausible to lower the minimum effective balance. So this is the 32 ETH threshold for entering the set, which is not being touched in the MaxiB upgrade. This could in principle be actually easier to reduce with something like Orbit, just because the mechanism isn't really sensitive to the minimum effective balance. If you notice, I never actually brought it up in any of the arguments before. And one important question here is, so this sounds like a big change. You're changing who's participating, the way they're chosen to participate. What does actually, you know, what changes? What does home staking in particular look like in this world? So let's first start from what stays the same, which is the frequency of participating in block construction, so proposals and inclusion list proposals, once we do have inclusion lists, which hopefully is soon. This is not going to change at all. Like, this does not depend at all on the way you're sampled to a test. Because essentially there's no technical limitations on, you know, there's only one person proposing each slot, there's only maybe a few people making inclusion lists. This has nothing to do with, we don't need to restrict this any further, essentially. And another point that I'm not going to be able to get into is that actually the influence of home stakers, or any stakers for that matter, on LMD Ghost, on the basically the regular fork choice that comes before finality, would completely stay the same, but I'm just not going to be able to explain exactly why that is the case with the time that we have. And now, what changes? So one important point is that you attest less often. So if you go back to the picture that we had before with the 64 small validators with 32 ETH, they're only chosen once every two epochs, essentially, like once every 64 slots. And so but it's less often than consolidated validators, but it's more or less as often as today, just half as often as today with the parameters that I said. You know, instead of once an epoch, you only attest once every two epochs, but the rewards are changed in such a way that you're not earning less than other consolidated validators. And another point that it's maybe more important is home stakers would generally have less influence over finality. Because, again, if you think about that picture from before, you have these 64 small validators, they're kind of compressed to one. So only one of them will actually end up in the set. So even if home stakers have, you know, maybe 10% of the stake, the amount of stake that they will have in the Orbit committee might be compressed. One point there is, so this is probably, I would say, the most contentious part of this proposal. But yeah, one point there is that it's already kind of the case. There's already very little influence that they have or finality, because there's only maybe 5 to 10% of stake that actually belongs to home stakers. And yeah, I mean, this was just bringing, just showing you why this compression happens again. And one last point is, we would probably want to ensure that we do have enough consolidation, since this is an important part of how we get better guarantees from this mechanism. How do we do so is probably to have consolidation incentives that essentially go down to zero once we reach a certain amount of consolidation that we're okay with. So maybe, you know, 75% or some other amount that we're happy with. And yeah, when we're outside of this regime, you have basically this incentive, if you're a staking pool or so on, to consolidate. And yeah, what's left, essentially, for the consensus protocol part, we have to spec it and prototype it. For the rest, a lot of it is really like having these hard discussions in the community around the future of staking and, you know, what of these trade-offs we're happy with. Decide what failure case we're happy with, and then yeah, we could introduce Orbit sampling in the current protocol, and then we could eventually move actually to 3SF or, you know, to some faster finality protocol. Thank you.
Okay. I'm gonna shuffle you along towards the center so everyone can look at your beautiful face. Thank you guys again. Give another round for Francesco. Perfect. So let's dive into the question, starting from the top. Avalanche already has single block finality with sub-second block times, where every validator votes on every block. Does this proposed system have any competitive edge against Avalanche consensus?
Yeah, so to my knowledge, and I mean, it might be outdated, but I don't think so. Avalanche does not have any accountable safety, so there's no way to actually say if there is a consensus failure. For example, let's say double finality, there's no way to say which validators exactly were responsible for it, because the way they reach consensus through this like subsampling mechanism that doesn't really get everyone to express an opinion on a block.
Okay, cool. Next, does 3SF work with lower slot times?
So 3SF is kind of built in a way that doesn't really change the way the slot works too much. So it would be a slot that it looks quite similar to today. There's some like minor things that I didn't talk about that kind of deviate from this. But generally speaking, most of what we could do with today's slot, we would also be able to do with 3SF, I would say.
Cool. It seems 3-slot finality provides both constant time finality and liveness. What hypothesis do you make to guarantee both?
I'm not entirely sure what exactly the... Yeah, I'm not entirely sure, but let's say like if by liveness you mean availability more specifically, then this is something that relates to this LMD Ghost part of the protocol. And yeah, it's possible to have both of them, finality and availability, because we have these two different kind of chains in a way. We have like the available chain and then finality on top. Otherwise, there would be an impossibility result. Maybe you mean something else, in which case maybe we can chat about it later.
Cool. Does Orbit changes how aggregators are sampled from the beacon attester sets?
No, most likely wouldn't, I would say. Yeah, we could just one way to do this is that we could just reuse all of the aggregation infrastructure that we have now, including the specific way the aggregators are selected.
The majority of home staker reward actually from the attestation. Does this change would... I'm not speaking English correctly. This change would make home stakers suffer by a lot, and just withdrawn being a home staker and go to liquid staking or something sent. Oh, okay, no, it's not me. It's
the answer is like the rewards would actually be the expected rewards. But when we talk about attestations, expected rewards and rewards are kind of the same because you attest so frequently. Like even with Orbit, you still be attesting like once every two epochs. You would not suffer because of that, because the expected rewards are still proportional to stake. So whether you stake 64 ETH in one validator or you have two validators of 32 ETH, your expected rewards are the same. You might have a little bit more variance, but it's attestations that we're talking about. You attest so often, then the variance is essentially irrelevant.
Cool. Okay. Would this change the staking APR, as not all validators are testing anymore, only the selected set?
Same kind of answer as before. Like, it wouldn't. Like, when you're not in the set, you don't get paid. But when you're in the set, you get paid a constant amount. So whether you are a 2,000 ETH validator or a 32 ETH validator, when you're in the set, you get paid the same. So you can think about it as, like, once you're in, you get paid way more than you should, like, based on your stake. Like, you're not paid proportionally to stake. So overall, the two things balance each other.
Okay. Well, I just got the sign, so I think that's all the time we have today.
All right, cool.
Thank you so much. Francesco.
Thanks, everyone.
We have another 5-minute break until it's actually 4:10 this time, from pure DAS to full DAS.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.